Okay, so welcome back, episode 7 of Watch Talk Across the Pond. And this week we're going to look at luxury watches. Hi, Bill, how's it going?
Not bad. How's it going, Dean?
Yeah, not too bad. So, well, we're back to just the two of us now. We've had all these guests for weeks and weeks, and now it's just the two of us again. How odd is that?
It's two is a lonely number.
Well, no, I don't know. Two, you know, three's a crowd and all that, so it's not too bad. So, what have you got on the wrist today? Let's do a wristwatch.
So I'm wearing a custom-built Watch Snob Island Timer, which see right there.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So tell us, where's this come from? Who's made it?
So this is from Brian Van Way Collection, which is a really cool designer here in America. One second.
Yeah.
Really cool designer here in America. He hand makes all the watches and... gives you this special little box.
Okay. Wow.
Brian Van Way limited edition. Yeah. Comes with bracelets, comes with a pillow, comes with a watch, comes with a bunch of stuff in there.
So is that like a commission? You commissioned him to make this watch for you?
Yeah, basically you go on his website or you hit him up through Facebook and you can have any watch your little heart desires, like that you can dream of. Mm. And he makes them and he does the dials and then he puts the watches together and it's got an open case back with a Volstock 7415 movement in there.
Oh, nice.
With a silver rotor. It's a very, you can't see it on the camera, but it's a silver customized Brian Van Way
I can see
rotor.
Yeah. Looks good. It's nice. And I know you like to see the movement. You like the idea.
I love the open case back. I'm a sucker for it. Yeah. That's like the beauty of watch collecting. I think it's like you're getting to see the gears.
I like to see it, especially, you know, unless it's a basic movement. If it's definitely worth looking at.
It's true. If it's undecorated and stuff like that, like he puts a little bit of time decorating like the rotor and
nice
stuff
that,
like that.
Yeah.
But like a Miyota is not really my favorite to look at per se.
Is that the movement? Is it like a Miyota?
I believe it's like the Volstock equivalent to a Miyota. Yeah.
Oh, sounds good, mate. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, I've got my perpetual. It's terrible.
Yeah, the light's
my
bad.
My perpetual chronograph.
Oh, wow.
And
is that automatic?
Yeah. I'll take it off and show
beautiful.
You. So it is. It's, you know, I think you could really impress somebody because, you know, you can see all the.
Oh, wow.
Again, lighting's pretty bad, but.
Look at that. That's beautiful.
Yeah.
What is that? A seagull movement? Or
yeah,
what is
it
that?
Is. Yeah. So it's a Chinese company, seagull, but because you get all, you know, lots of watch snobs about that, you know, it's like. So these things are really cheap, but I got
I'll tell
this,
you, seagull movements are beautiful. Like the open case
like
back on
new.
A seagull.
Yeah, they look really great. And I think they were Swiss. It was the old Venus, and I think they were Swiss and everything.
Oh, they were Swiss at one point?
Yeah. I think the machinery was Swiss. And I think what happened was that the China had bought, I can't think of the year, maybe in like the 50s or something, but China had bought the old machinery because they wanted to make watches for the army and everything. So they literally had sort of purchased all the old Venus Swiss machinery. This is what I believe. I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. Put it in the comments, everyone, if I'm wrong. They bought this machinery and everything. And in all honesty, if that machinery was in Switzerland, it would be Swiss made and people, you know, this watch would cost you £2,000, but because the Chinese bought it for the, you know, for their army, etc. You can pick up this fantastic watch and it's fine. And, you know,
crazy how that works.
I like the fact there's loads of watch snobs about because it means I can get a really fantastic Colin Wheel chronograph. This was as good as new. Mm-hmm. And I picked it up. I think I paid £80 for it.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
But if you buy it new, you're probably looking at about, I think, £250, £300.
That's not bad. I mean, I love those movements. They're beautiful, aren't they?
Yeah. And it's,
with the gold and everything.
I'm sure it's on a par with what somebody might buy new that's got Swiss made for £2,000. Paid £80 for it.
So, of course.
Yeah, we love the watch snobs. Keep on making these watches cheap for people to
keep
pick up
being jerks and pretending like you care. You care that it's Chinese. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So well, good. So Yeah, we luxury watches, which actually, I mean, having just said that, we're talking about luxury watches. I feel completely out of my, almost out of my comfort zone. But to be honest, and it's a shame Abdul wasn't here tonight, because I know Abdul's got quite a few luxury watches as well.
He does.
But he's been home to Egypt, and he's been tied up with that one. He couldn't quite make it tonight. But
he's eating KFC at the pyramids.
Yeah, probably.
You know
yeah.
that they have that? They have a KFC right next to the pyramids, or Taco Bell.
Here's the pyramid.
Here's Taco Bell. It's like
it
the funniest
it,
thing,
though, doesn't it? It spoils it. You think you're going to look at the pyramids,
that's what and I'm, then you think it's the middle of nowhere.
You turn around slightly, you see a KFC.
It ruins the experience, right?
It's gone. It doesn't quite work.
Like America. Yeah. That's all I hear. You know.
It doesn't quite. Yeah, it's a shame, really. But no, I'm quite interested in this one because I think, you know, like I say, if Adam was here, I could be asking both of you, but you know, it'd be a bit interesting to ask you anyway. Mm-hmm. I need to know more about luxury watches. I've got to be honest, I've never bought a luxury watch. The most I've spent on a watch is about £350, which feels quite luxury to me. I know it was only about 6 years ago when I picked up a Christopher Ward for half price. As, you know, a watch probably worth about £750 for about £320. But it's about £650 for about £325 about 6 years ago, and 5 or 6 years ago. And yeah, I mean, you know, all my friends who are definitely not poor people by any stretch, and I'm sure most of them could go and buy whatever they wanted, really. But they would, you know, treat me like royalty. Oh my God, look, you've got a luxury watch. You know, they were wearing their, you know, £10 supermarket quartz watches. And I felt like a king, really, for, you know, and that was 6 years ago.
That's the reason why
you
buy luxury, right? Just to get that feeling of grandeur, you know?
And, yeah, and, you know, now I sort of, you know, I've worked out that £325 watch, which you got half price in the Christmas sale, which started me off, is, I'm pretty sure, not really a luxury watch. It's, you know, it's...
Quasi-luxury is what they call it. Quasi-luxury or semi-luxury.
There's almost three levels. There's a sort of watches £50 under from the supermarket, and it's quite a few of my mates are in that, fall into that category. And then when the battery runs out, they chuck it away and get a new one. There's the sort of, you know, a £350 watch you can pick up, and then, you know, and that could extend to 1,000, 2,000 maybe. And then there's the sort of, you know, maybe even four categories that you know, there's the sort of.
So I've got a list of brands and where they fall in the spectrum of luxury.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be an interesting one. Yeah,
which is,
you got that?
Interesting. Yeah, I've got it right here. Which, if you look at Christopher Ward right now, is actually an entry level luxury.
So that's where I started 6 years ago. I've gone downhill since, and I think in all honesty, I've discovered Seiko and another companies, yeah.
Well, Seiko's in there too. Seiko's entry level as well on this list.
Entry level. What's Grand Seiko?
As well, Longines is entry level. Rado, which is, you know, Hamilton. These are all entry level, supposedly, according to this list.
I can agree with that. I get it. Yeah,
I agree too.
What's the next level up? What's after that then?
It's middle level, and it goes Tag Heuer, Balmaceur, Ball, Bell & Ross, Tudor, Breitling, Nomos, Montblanc, Maurice Lacroix, and then we go into high luxury, which is Rolex, Grand Seiko, Zenith, Ulysses Nardin, Karl F. Buescher, IWC, my bad, Hublot, and then we go into, this is just called luxury, and it's Piguet or whatever. Audemars Piguet. No, I did not see that there.
AP. They're the old Trinity, aren't they? PPAP.
AP is prestige luxury. That's up there.
Prestige luxury.
Regular luxury is Creeder, JLC, Piguet, Breguet, H. Moiser. And then we go up to, this is prestige luxury, which is the A. Lange & Söhne, the Patek Philippe, the Artemis Piguet, Richard Mille.
Yeah, yeah.
And a bunch of ones up there. Yeah, oh my gosh.
I will say I totally agree with that list. I think they were spot on with all that.
You think so, yeah?
That's in my mind. I'm sure that people will put in the comments, that somebody was a step too high or step too low, etc. Mm-hmm. But I think they were pretty spot on.
I think they're fair, but I think that luxury, like you said to your friends, like luxury to one person might not mean luxury to other people. Like, mm-hmm. for example, to me, luxury is like if I'm spending more than $500 on a watch, that's luxurious to me because that's a step above my, you know, 200, 300, whatever I can afford.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Whereas like to me, to someone who has like multiple Rolexes and looks at me, they're like, what the hell? You're bragging about this watch when I just spent 20K. And it's like, well, I don't have 20K. Like, so
it's just that sort of level where you are. It depends what you've already got, how much you've got for. So, you know, some people will think, They would just walk in the AD and spend 20,000, 30,000 £1,000, and it would it'd be nothing to them. It would just be
like dropping change.
Yeah. But and then other people will save like crazy and buy something for a few hundred pounds. I think it's all kind of relative to, you know, where you are in the grand scheme of things.
I was actually in Florida on in West Palm in like this really luxurious area, driving around with my dad. My dad grew up in West Palm, Florida. So he was showing me like where Trump's house is and like all the luxury places that he got to go and explore when he was a kid. Yeah. And we stopped in a jeweler and I saw someone buy a AP just like that. Like, oh, that's fine. Mm. Oh, you know, and they knew him. You know, he was getting wine. We didn't get anything. We were just window shopping in the store. They didn't give us a damn thing. He's got his wine. He's got his. I'm like, oh my god, this guy's just must be in there all the time. You know, like I was just like, they wouldn't even let me look at the watches. They wouldn't let it take it out of the case. I mean, not that they know me, but I could be a billionaire. You know what I'm saying? But they treated me like I was less than a human.
I think people do make judgments on people as well, which is unfair.
Of course,
you could literally have a chap, you know, he could be in his 60s, he could be in a quite a nice suit, and then there could be a 20-year-old walk in, you know, he's
in
dressed
a Hawaiian
shirt and jeans or whatever, and you know, the reality is that the guy in his 60s might not have nowhere near the wealth as the 20-year-old, and yet we're all guilty. We make those judgments, don't we? And I think different
it's
people.
Like Pretty Woman. You ever seen Pretty Woman?
It's funny enough, it's a film I've never seen actually. Julia Roberts.
There's a scene in it where she goes in. Julia Roberts goes into the store and she wants to purchase this beautiful necklace or whatever the hell it was. And they won't even give her the time of day because they think she's just a common hooker. And she comes back in with all the money that she got from dating the rich guy. And she goes, stick it up your ass, basically. And plops the money down and grabs the thing that she wanted and F's off. Yeah, and it's like, wow, that's like the ultimate, you know, hey, you know, you judged me before, but you know, you can't really touch me right now. So it's kind of funny. One day I'll go in there with my my big duffel bag, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
froze.
I never let any of that get to me, really.
That English, you know, to me, Wi-Fi working well.
You know, I try not to judge. I know I must do like everybody, but I try not to judge. And I don't like the idea of people judging me. Now, funny enough, I did actually go into, and I said I was going to do this. I did actually go into the, and it's very rare for me to actually go into an authorized dealer. Very rare, you know. I would just buy a watch secondhand or online. But I did actually go into the authorized dealer in Nottingham on Thursday, just gone. So a few days ago. So what's that, about three or four days ago? And because the Tudor had bought, and I like, I know you're not a massive Tudor fan, but I do like Tudor. They'd bought the new ceramic, black bay ceramic out. And I'd been on the sort of one of the Tudor Facebook groups. And I think I'd sort of, you know, in a couple of discussions put, oh, I'm going to go into the dealer. And a couple of people said, oh, let us know how you get on and that sort of thing. So I almost didn't have time at lunchtime from work, but I did have enough time. So I went into the dealer and I'd actually tried a couple of Tudor watches on Black Bays. I tried the 41 and the 39. I thought the 39 was going to be miles too small, but it wasn't. It was really good. The 41 was quite junky. And I actually put my name on the waiting list for the new ceramic. And also
that's my guy.
The, Silver, the Black Bay Silver as well.
Okay.
The waiters. So I thought, well, when they come through, I might not buy them, but, you know, I'll go down and have a look at them and, you know, and I'll be quite appalled if they don't treat me, you know, treat me as good as anybody else. You know, I might not buy them. I've had my name on the waiting list before through watching it, and it's come through. They phoned up and said, oh, you're next on the waiting list. And I said, oh, I've changed my mind.
Dean, splurge. Just buy yourself something nice, you know, a retirement gift, something nice.
I could do. I know. Well, we'll see. But from your perspective, what is your definition of a luxury? What to you, Bill, is your definition of what you think a luxury watch is? And this is a two-parter. How much money do you think that for you a luxury watch would start at? What is one, and how much would you want to pay?
So to me, a luxury watch has to have sapphire crystal, has to be like, you know, great quality, great build, you know, a good movement, usually Swiss made. I kind of tend to be more heavy on that than I do other countries of origin. But I just think that a luxury watch just has to show off that they actually put some detail, actually put the time into building this watch. It can't just be like, you know, the genuine leather strap. Like, I want to show that you actually put material and put money into this watch while creating this design, and I want it to be something that's fresh and funky. And like I said, $500 to me is luxury. I don't care what people say.
People
always say, oh, it's got to be like over $1,000, over a couple thousand, you know. And it's like, to me, I think you can get a good watch out there for $500. I mean, you can get a quality watch for around $500. So it's like, I just think that, you know, that to me is luxury, you know.
I think you quite like heritage as well, don't you? Like companies.
Yeah.
You know, they've got heritage. I mean, I've been, in the last week, I've been making a video on diver watches under £3,000. So the aim was to get roughly about 3,000. And I've been looking at Oris as one company. And I'm quite surprised. I mean, Oris have been around since, I think it was something like I've got it written down, about 1915, something like that. You know, they're an independent company, been making watches for years. I mean, I think there was a point in time where they were one of the biggest employees in the world. You know, Swiss people working, you know, Swiss watch workers. They're one of the biggest, you know. And I know things have changed. And they only make automatic watches now, because I know you like the automatic thing.
Exactly.
As well. So an Oris, I know you've, having said that, you bought an Oris recently. So, or you've traded for an Oris, but Oris are all the things you like. They use, you know, they only make automatic, they've got the heritage, they're Swiss. Now, one thing that was quite interesting, watches under £3,000, which is different to watches under £1,000, which is my last category, are for £3,000. So there was Oris Acris, there was Seiko Marine Master, and there was Tudor Black Bay, and they all for under 3,000 got in-house movement.
Okay.
Oris, interestingly, mainly for the Oris have been, and they're a bit cheaper, they're normally probably under 2,000 sometimes, but they have been using Swiss movements.
Yeah.
And they've been altering them, you know, they've been...
because it's a base of a Solita, I believe a Solita or a, I forget which
it is. Yeah, it's an SW. And they've been putting their red, you know, red coloured rotors on and altering them a little bit. But they, I think it was October last year, had bought out this Calibre 400. So now you can get it's a lot more. So... You know, you can get the one with the SW movement for, you know, on a bracelet for $1,800. Now for $2,700, you can buy the Oris Acris Calibre 400 in-house movement.
And that's their own movement, huh?
Own in-house movement. It's very accurate. I don't think it said it was Costco or Metis or anything, but it was very accurate movement. It's got, you know, the silicon air spring and everything, so it's very, you know, very good against magnetism. 120 hours power reserve.
Oh, wow.
And this is the almost the best bit coming up, is 10-year warranty on it.
And, oh my God.
You know, you don't need any service or anything for 10 years with that movement.
Wow.
And I think that's where it's at as well. Because I think, you know, Oris, they've come up with these sort of movements where they don't have to have the, you know, the bits lubricated so much and they don't wear. And so, you know, you've got 10 years for that.
My Oris movements were very loud. Have you ever tried an Oris? All the Orises I've ever owned have this really loud rotor. It's not, I don't know if it's a bad thing or a good thing, but they have this, like, you can hear it. It's like, whoop, 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 whoop. Hear that thing spinning about.
Yeah, I wouldn't be so keen on that. But, yeah, it's been quite interested to, you know, I was researching a lot about this Calibre 400 and everything today. And so Oris have actually used both in-house and just Swiss movements, off-shelf movements. Mm-hmm. And Tudor have done the same. I can't remember the Tudor, because on some of their watches, they've got like the curvy right at the bottom. Well, I think that was for the in-house movement.
Okay.
And then they've got the straight text, which I think was the, could be the way around, for the the off-the-shelf movements. Mm-hmm. So Tudor have done both as well. For Tudor,
do they like, I know for Rolex, I don't know if it's true anymore, but for my Rolex, it was built by one person, one watchmaker put that watch together. Does that make sense?
I don't believe so. Necessarily. The thing with the Tudor as well was that the in-house movement Tudors were always a lot chunkier.
Oh.
And the 41 sounds a really good size for my wrist.
Yeah.
Because it's got quite long lugs and it's chunky, it wears really big. I couldn't understand why everyone seemed... Because when I was on the Facebook and I was trying to get photos, this, that, the other, what should be in my top three of divers under 3,000, everyone was saying, you know, this 39 millimeter Tudor, I can't think what it's called, but it's the 39 millimeter one. I couldn't work it out. I kept thinking, well, that's going to be a bit small. But when I tried it on a couple of days ago, it's got quite long lug lengths.
Yeah, the lugs are nice on Tudor and Rolex.
It's quite thin. You're relatively thin compared to the 41 mil, and the bracelet tapers and everything. And it's great. It looks great, Bill, and it fits. I'm 7 1/4 inch wrist. I think you're 7.5, aren't you?
Yeah. Last time I checked, I haven't checked in a while.
I'm surprised. For a dive watch of a bezel and everything, 39 mil. I thought it was going to be too small, but it wore really well. But so yeah, I think where I'm getting at is, the in-house movement, is that part of luxury as well? Because you talk about Swiss movements.
I think so, but I just like knowing that it's like, you know, even Salida and Etta and stuff like that, they make some quality movements. But yeah, I do like the fact that, like, when companies do take their movements, use the base, and then they put their own rotor, put their own markings, and put their own, make it their own in a way. What I don't like is sometimes companies will lie, like, oh, in-house movement. And then you have to read the fine print, and it's like, it's an Etta. And it's like, oh, well, don't tell me it's in-house. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure my Christopher Ward said something like that. And then you read more, and it's like a Salida something, SW200 or something.
Yeah, with Christopher Ward, they were the first British company for, I can't remember how many years, say 50 years or so many years, to... put in-house movements in watches.
Oh, really?
So they were using Swiss movements.
Well, you know, Rolex was developed in England. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Hans Wildorf started in England with his Rolex company and then moved to Switzerland. So England's got some history.
Well, and that same chap is the guy that started Tudor as well. So there's a sister company.
Yeah. And who started, is there a Christopher Ward? Is there a guy named Christopher Ward?
Yeah, so he left the company about a year ago, strangely. there was three of them. There was Mike Francis, there was Christopher Ward, and I can't remember the other chap's name. I've met them all at the Christopher Ward get-togethers, and they're all really nice chaps. Oh, Peter Ellis, the other one, I think he's called Peter Ellis. And apparently the reason that they called the... there were three partners and they're all equal. The reason they went with Christopher Ward was because they considered that to be the best name.
Oh, it's such a nice name. Literally, I mean, I could never remember name. Peter Ellis or whatever else you said.
And like Francis didn't seem right, especially their Francis on the wristwatch.
But, Frank, think about that. Here's my watch, Frank.
But there was that Peter and Mike knew each other. They both worked at a company together. Mm-hmm. And then Christopher, so they kind of worked together and Chris was separate. But now they've parted ways, and I think Mike is the real big player. But they all have their own little role. Mike, I mean, I've met all of them and I've listened to them a lot. Mike comes across as being really clever,
good,
really clued up, really clever sort of chap. He's always been the one. I mean, I'd met Mike, I think, first out of the three. I had a bit of a chat with him. I think I'd met Peter as well at another point in time. And then the one I'd not spoken to for quite some time then was Christopher Ward, you know, because I've been to a couple of the get-togethers. Mm-hmm. And then I think I was walking out at the end of one of them and, you know, just about on my way out and saw Christopher Ward and just started chatting to him for ages and really, really nice down-to-earth guy. So I've actually sort of spoken to all three of them. And they had sort of employed somebody to, you know,
take
design and produce the renounced movement. And this person, and again, the name won't come to me, but he'd come up with about four, I think there's about four variations on this, which they'd used in different watches.
Oh, wow.
I came very close to buying one of them watches. Like, I won't go into details. I didn't. Which is quite a long story, which I'll tell another day.
The blue sapphire one? I like that blue sapphire, Christopher Ward.
Oh, yeah, that's quite nice, isn't it? Yeah.
Remember that? That one was a hot one. And then I also like the moon one. You know, you've seen the moon one?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's another cool one.
Yeah, I think did the moon one have one of the... Yeah, I can't remember. But these in-house movements were in different watches. I mean, I used to be really into the company at one time. I did used to sort of know all this information. But I think a bit like you, I think it was all this strange logo positioning.
Oh, yeah, what the hell?
I think some people just sort of lost a bit of faith and moved on. But I always keep my eye out. And they have of late started putting the logo back at 12 o'clock and they're
good.
Do they
shorten it too? Because I liked it where it was CRS Ward. I like that.
It was
versus
a lot better. That was the sort of, yes, I think they've had three over time and that was the second one. So, to me, my first, I think I got a Seiko 5, which is traded with a friend for an old quartz watch.
Yeah, you told me that.
But just before I got that watch, I'd already ordered the Christopher Ward, which was my first watch that I purchased. But I had the only reason I had the Seiko first was that watch hadn't been delivered. Mm-hmm. So I'd gone from sort of not having an automatic watch to within a few days having a Seiko and a Christopher Ward. And so for my first two or three years, I was really into Christopher Ward and Seiko. And,
now, did you consider that luxury at the time?
Yeah, the Christopher Ward, the Seiko that I traded with a friend.
Not the Seiko, the Christopher.
Well, that was an old, you know, really, it was really battered. I had to do it up and everything. It was really bad. I didn't realise. I saw it across the room. I traded the watch. When I got home and saw it in the light, it was just all battered and everything. I thought, what have I done? But I actually took a lot of pride in actually doing that watch up and getting it like brand new. And
you polished it?
I got it. Oh, I did a lot of work on it and I really enjoyed it and learned a lot from that experience. And it got like a silver sunburst dial and it got all gold indices and all. And all I could see across the room, the way the light was hitting, it was all this sort of gilt gold, all shining.
Yep.
And I just thought, I've got to have that watch. And I traded it for a quartz watch and got some money as well off this guy. And at that point in time, I saw that as a luxury watch. But when I looked those watches up, and then going back 6 years ago, that Seiko 5s you could pick up for probably about £50 at the time. You know,
crazy.
So it wasn't an expensive. I know they've gone up quite a bit, even they've gone up. But
at least the CW, I mean, that's a good brand right there. You know, I'd consider that luxury at least.
Well, that had all the things you said. It had sapphire crystal. It had Swiss got movement. Ceramic bezel. It got Swiss movement.
Mm-hmm. And the quality bands they have. I don't know if you guys have leather, but mine.
The bracelet was very good.
Yeah.
And I got that for about £325. And it was.
Not bad.
Looking back, it was probably, to be honest, it's probably one of the best watches I've owned in many ways. And it had the logo, you know, the logo was good at 12 o'clock and it was the old logo. Mm-hmm. The only thing was, I always wanted the black. And it was the white dial with the black bezel, but I wanted the black.
And you said it had the white waves. What do you call those?
It had the guilloche.
Guilloche.
Guilloche. I always say, you think it's guilloche. I always say glossy, but I listened to the French-speaking Leslie from, she was a podcast, I can't even think of the name now, but I listened to her say that word, and it's guilloche. She's guilloche. Is very French.
It sounds Chinese. Like, it sounds like, I don't know, like Japanese
Chinese,
or something.
Yeah.
You tell me, guilloche. Like, you tell me it doesn't sound
it's
like.
It's a sort of, it's not necessarily wave, but it's just a pattern.
Mm-hmm. So it's not the wave. I thought it was.
It's not necessarily wave. It's just a pattern. But on the Christopher Ward, it was like a wave pattern. But the other one was the Amiga Seamaster we looked at a few weeks back, if you remember.
Oh yeah.
And it had the grey dial with the blue guilloche pattern. Mm-hmm. Is I think that's luxury, you know, grail. But at the same time, another question of mine was, I'm not totally sure. If I think of luxury watches like Rolex, I personally never think of Submariner. I actually think of the dress watches like the Datejust, the OP, the Auto Perpetual, mm-hmm. the, you know, all them sort of watches to me that mm-hmm. you could, you know, almost, I could see myself going to a really nice hotel or restaurant with a nice suit on.
Yep.
And I could have, you know, and I think precious metals like white gold.
Yeah.
Those sorts of watches, to me that's real luxury.
And so it has to have precious metals, huh?
I will in some point in time pay a lot of money for a watch that's a dress watch, it's precious metal, but I don't
get
think
an older Seamaster. That'd be nice. Get an
I'd
old
like a 50, Seamaster.
60, 70,
I'd pay 5,000 for pay 4,000 or 5,000 for a nice Seamaster.
No, but you can get one for like under a grand. Seamaster, yeah, the gold.
I'd
you know,
with that, but I wouldn't pay, you know, because I know it's difficult, you know, you can't go and buy them from the dealers. And on the grey market, if you get a Submariner, you're probably looking at like, what, about 10, 12,000 pounds?
Yeah, I'd say like 12,000 bucks.
I would never pay that for Submariner. I know a lot of people, you know, that's the grail watch, but I just don't see that as being luxury, personally.
I personally think the Seamaster is like, I mean, not the Seamaster, my bad. The Rolex Submariner, my bad, is so plain. I mean, it's so over-copied. It think about it. Every watch brand has a watch that looks just like it.
So you're buying a watch that isn't luxury because every there's lots of watches like it.
Exactly.
But then, you know, when you look, you know, when we did a show on this one, when you look at things like the new Rolex, Oyster Perpetual, Datejust and things, the one that bought out the coloured dials, they bought out, you know, the nice patterns, leaf patterns.
I would get that in a heartbeat. I would spend my 12 grand on that.
You know, and there was the other pattern, wasn't there, with the gold, and it got the grey, but it was all patterned. I suppose that was a guilloche sort of pattern. Mm-hmm. You know, the precious metals, some of them, to me, they are luxury watches. Yeah, I'm sure that I'd feel happy spending money on them, but I would spend 10,000 on a non-precious metal Submariner. I can't see.
Yeah,
on
like a stainless steel. Yeah,
it's just no point.
I agree with that.
I think. Yeah,
but precious. I do like that. I don't know if Rolex still does it or not, or how it works. But if one watchmaker is building that movement for that watch, I mean, that's pretty cool, right there. That's like from what I was researching. I mean, I don't know if it's true anymore. Like I said, from what I was researching, they put their own stamps on it. Certain makers, like the in their company, will put stamps on the inside of the case back.
Yeah,
and like you can trace. I know I was reading a story about this guy who went to go get his Rolex serviced, and they found out that his grandfather or great-grandfather was a Nazi who stole that watch from a Jewish person back in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
And that person bought it all off the markers, the stamps from that, you know, the case back from that, you know, person who built that watch. No, you know, it went from this factory to this guy, and then this was stolen. And the guy ended up giving it back to the family of the survivor.
Oh, wow, that's really good, though.
Which
is
really nice.
Yeah.
But, like, like, that's, like, kind of a cool, you know, that makes it kind of exclusive. Like, each one's different. Like a fingerprint. Not every one of them.
I think that's nice.
Exactly. Yeah. Like,
is it the French watchmaker? Is it Dufour? His name's like Dufour.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, them sort of people that they don't just make an in-house movement. They actually make the every component as part of that movement. They don't they don't buy the components and put them together and make an in-house movement. They make every component from scratch,
with Rolex.
From bits of metal, you know.
And Rolex goes and mine. They have mines getting diamonds. Mm. They mine their gold. Mm. Like, they have their own mines and stuff like that. I was reading all about that going, oh my God, like, that's pretty cool to think about, you know?
Like, I think I'll tell you what would be really nice, what would be really luxury is along them lines, is where you get a manufacturer that, you know, one person, they make all them, they undo them, they, you know, maybe even as you getting that watch, maybe you get to meet that person, and there's some sort of, you know, signature and handwritten bit from them and everything. That'd be great.
That's true luxury right there. Like I said, it's like a fingerprint. Yeah. Not everyone will be exactly alike. It's not mass produced. It's, you know, I mean, it will be the same movement and same look and stuff like that, but it's like, has its own uniqueness to it, you know?
I think that's really high end, isn't it? Like Roger Smith and them sort of people.
Yeah.
You know, Dufour and, you know, people who they sort of make one watch a year or something crazy. And, you know, I think that's fantastic. And I, you know, I'm sure that is well out of my pocket. And, you know, it's a dream
well
thing.
Out of mine too.
But I like watching them videos and, you know, I don't need to own it. I'd love to look at it. I'd like to go to the shows and see that, be able to touch it and see it. But I'm, you know, it's a bit like going to see a Picasso painting to me.
Exactly.
I don't need to buy it and own it, but it's I can go and see it, you know.
Mm-hmm. And admire.
Knowing, you know, when I went to Paris last time, we went to Musée d'Orsay and I could see all them wonderful paintings. Like, oh, getting close to all those
Monet and stuff like that.
Need to have it on my wall at home. And I'm a bit like that. Watches, to be honest. So I appreciate luxury, and I would like to own the odd luxury watch, but, you know, I can also appreciate lots of luxury being out there.
It also loses its like if you had that Monet painting in your house, right? It loses its value in your own mind. Like, if you're walking past it every day, oh, I've seen this. Like, it's not that special to me anymore. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. There, right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. I just appreciate it. And it's nice to watch the videos, potentially go.
But what I don't like is I don't know if you see this, but sometimes I'll be watching ads for watches and they'll show a guy with his monocle, like, tinkering with it and putting things in there. And I'm thinking, let's be honest, like, that's a machine. Like, there's no guy, you know, being a wise guy over there going, oh, yeah, this looks, you know, it's machine done. So, like,
a lot of it is machine done, definitely.
Which kind of bothers me. I wish we could go back to the, you know, having, you know, some 70-year-old there with his monocle tinkering about, you know, that'd be.
Yeah, I mean, there are a few companies still there that say that they do make everything. It's
I know, like, Tag Heuer, they have, like, they don't make it, like, I know it's like quartz and stuff like that, but they'll have, like, experts look at them and examine every single piece and put in certain jewels and such like that. I was watching a tour of them.
To some extent, there is, not everything is machine done. You know, quite a few of the components are put together as, you know, the servicing is an example as well. When you watch, servicing luxury watches is very expensive, and they literally take all their components out and, you know, clean them and wash them and stuff. You know, it's understandable that there is a lot of expense there. I mean, that's
but it's also like a grand. Have you ever? Well, I serviced my Rolex and it ran me like a grand, which I think is BS. Like, I think if you bought a Rolex, I think if you buy a Rolex, like,
you
not that I bought it new.
Free,
I'm saying if I bought a Rolex brand new and I had you know, a couple years later, I was like, oh, I might as well get a service. Mm. Oh, here's a grand. I'd be kind of pissed.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think this is good now that more manufacturers are starting to produce watches that can have long periods between services, like we said, the Oris Calibre 400 is 10 years.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of Amiga watches now that have got longer services. And I think
but they're coaxials, yeah. Well.
And I think that's a really good thing, to be honest. I mean, my a lot of my watches are so cheap that it's just not. I've got to worry about servicing, you know, because I've got, you know, that was £80. Why would I don't need it servicing? I'd pay more than the £80 to have it serviced. Yeah. What's the point?
The tax is going back to China.
There's every chance this is probably going to work all my life, you know, with no service. That's the thing.
Exactly.
I'm on a winner with that. £80, and you know, I've got to pay £1,000 every service. It will probably last a lifetime.
You're making me want to get a Seagull. I love their case backs are just so gorgeous.
Like I say, it's old Swiss machinery. They're really excellent movements. They look really good. But, you know, I think if you didn't tell people that they were Chinese made.
Oh, people would think it was. You showed me that case back. I was like, is that, you know, that's a beautiful case back. I thought it was like wicked luxury. I was like, oh my gosh, he's wearing a nice.
It's definitely worth getting. One Seagull. I actually know one for sale at the minute. I think it's about £105. It's got the same movements as that and everything. I'll speak to you about it offline anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Someone's almost given it away. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're about. I came close to picking that watch up myself, so I'd have two of these. I thought, what's the point of what you got?
I wonder why, you know. China gets that. I think just China pumps out so much stuff that it just becomes, they just kind of bury themselves in their own junk. Does that make sense? Like, whereas Rolex only does, let's say they do 1,000 a year. I don't know how much they produce, but let's say they produce 1,000 watches a year. Well, I bet you, you know, China is producing 25,000 watches a year, and it becomes oversaturated.
Having said that, I actually know this. Do you know how many watches? Last year was different because of the COVID thing. Do you know how many watches that Rolex produce a year?
How many?
1 million.
So that's not even that's not even that little. I mean, 1 million people.
It's bizarre, isn't it? It's bizarre. It's a lot. 1 million watches a year. It's just,
which is a shit ton.
It's just mad, isn't it?
And if you're doing 1 million, that means the Chinese companies are doing probably billions and billions and billions.
Yeah. It sounds a lot, but yeah, that's apparently what they do. But they were down quite a lot last year. They'd lost a lot of money in a sense last year.
Well, I mean, who was buying Rolexes during, you know, especially, you know, the markets were down. People were losing money, losing their jobs.
I'm not sure if it was so much that buyers were down as they weren't able to. They were down on production.
Oh because of COVID. Else.
And so that does it because you know you can't go and buy the watches, so I suppose that does equate to down on sales. Mm-hmm. But they can't produce the watches to meet demand, can they? Demand is higher than production,
which is good. That's how they keep people people hooked.
Exactly.
If you think
part
about
of that
it.
Is marketing and everything else, but that is why Rolex is so expensive.
Oh yeah, here's an interesting one. Can any Seiko or microbrand watches be considered as luxury?
I think Grand Seiko is doing stuff that's, I mean, their horology and their
it's almost
better.
Different, isn't it, to Seiko? So they bought Grand Seiko to compete with Swiss Luxury. Mm-hmm. So I think the answer's got to be yes for Grand Seiko.
So it has to be Seiko, regular Seiko. Well, we talked about that Seiko, what's Master Marine, isn't that what you said?
Oh, Marine Master.
Marine Master, that's like $3,000.
Yeah, $2,800. There was a limited edition one, which was 3,000.
Yeah.
So 2,800 to 3,000. Is that luxury?
I would say. I mean, I know. I kind of argued against the fact that that cost comes into play when it comes to luxury. But at that point, if you're spending $3,000 on a watch, I hope to God they put the time in to make a good movement.
It's
I hope
the Zuitsu. I'm saying that right. Zuitsu polish.
Okay.
Polish. So it's got brushing and polishing, but the polish, the finish of the polish, is these Zuitsu polishers. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly how long, but they probably spend a few years training to be good at polishing. And at one time, apparently, to get those watches touched up and repolished, your watch had to be sent off to Japan.
You got to give Japan credit for that. Like they're always about like, you know, training people and like putting the time into building up, you know, like people's skills into creating something that's going to be well-liked and well observed. So yeah. You got to give him credit where credit's due. I mean, that alone right there is a $3,000 if you think about it. You know, you think about the training and the history probably behind it. That guy's grandfather was probably a friggin' whatever you called it, Hugetsu or whatever. You know, it's like that adds a lot to the build, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot of the Grand Seiko got that sort of Suritsu polish in. But then when you think of the Marine Master, it is 300 meters. It's got that sort of technical side to it and everything. It is their sort of top diver watch. But then it takes features of Grand. I think even the movement is similar to some of the Grand Seiko.
Is it a high
and
beat?
The Suritsu polish. So you've almost on the top end of Seiko got some of the elements, some of the level of Grand Seiko.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you could almost
like
pay
an iceberg. You know,
you pay much less money, like Seiko prices for some of the Grand Seiko luxury, in a sense.
Yeah, which is nice. I would consider that luxury. I mean, I don't know how you would feel about that, but I think micro brands, in a way, because they're so unique. Like, for example, micro brands only, let's say they put out like 350 of that one watch. Even if it's got a good movement, good everything, and you know they put the time into that watch, I think to an extent that's luxury, just because the market's not over flooded with it. You know, it's got that rarity, it's got that uniqueness to it. You know,
well, most micro brands, I mean, the watches are pretty cheap. They have got the heritage. They you know, you buy that, it's never going to go up in value and things. Now it is an interesting one. Again, I've been spending a lot of time on Facebook groups just lately, doing research for a couple of videos I'm making in particular. But while you're on them groups doing your bit of research, you also notice other things. And there was a lot of a lot of messages coming through about Ming.
Ming, I've never heard of them.
Ming, I'm not quite sure where they're based, but so it's one for you to look up. There's this company called Ming.
I'm going to look it up right now.
Quite unique watches,
mm-hmm.
and they've gone massive. You know, everyone wants to buy these Ming watches, and they're commanding a lot of money. And what's happening is,
holy crap! You're right.
Yeah, like Rolex, you can buy their watches if you can get one,
and then
you can sell on the grey market for twice the amount. So everyone was trying to buy these special Mings. They sold out in minutes.
They're not anything special. I mean, looking at their.
I don't think they got a second. A lot of the ones they were selling the other day, I don't think they got a second hand, which would bug me. What's the point of having a nice automatic movement, not seeing that lovely sweeping second hand?
Yeah, it's just, it looks like
I
a
do
Movado.
Like the watches. I do like them, but they like the second hand, some of them do.
Let me show you. Let me screen share this so we can see what's going on. It's like a host is able to screen, but it looks like a Movado. It's got the big circle on the top.
It has got a circle, yeah, that's Ming.
And it's got the just hands, no sweeping secondhand. Ming.
I think the one they did the other day, there was a honey coloured one, which I quite like the look of. There was a black and a honey coloured one. But
even the back is ugly. Look at the back. The back is just plain. Just says Ming.
You're not sharing.
I'm sorry. You disabled screen sharing. You got to enable it for me.
Oh, sorry. I'll try and just do that. Screen share. There you go. You could share. Sorry. It's just the default.
Look at.
Yeah. That's the one. Nice.
You tell me that doesn't look like a Movado a little bit? Look at the circle up there.
I'm not over familiar with the Movado, to be honest, but
Movado's like a plain. It's usually just a plain black face with a white circle up at the top, right there.
Yeah. I tell you the strange thing, Bill. I actually spotted Ming a couple of years ago when they first come out. Literally when they first come out. And I was debating whether to get one. I so wish I had, because all the Mings have gone up massively. If you bought a Ming a few years ago, you would have made, you know, you'd have made more than a Ming than a Rolex.
Here's what I'm trying to say. Look, at limited to 150 pieces.
No. And what they were doing, they weren't even doing first come, first serve. They were using some sort of lottery system to allocate the watches and all sorts of, and some people weren't very happy with it all. And a lot of people were buying them because they knew they could sell them and make twice the money.
So this is the guy who made it. He's just a photographer named Ming Thang. I can't say Thane.
Yeah.
And so he's just a photographer.
It's very much about the look, isn't it? He's into the aesthetics of it.
Yeah, I mean, no offense, I could take this freaking photo. Just black and white my foot. Just take a picture of my room, put it black and white. I don't get photography. Maybe I'm kind of a jerk, but I just don't get photography sometimes. Like, I understand, like, this shot's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Photography to me is kind of
it's
like...
It's not as easy as you think. I mean, that to me... That
oh, it's definitely not bad, as easy as... It, you know, it's definitely not as easy as you think. So what luxury brands... On the list of the luxury brands that I mentioned, which ones would you... If you could go right now and purchase one, which one would you be into?
If money wasn't an object, mm-hmm. I would...
What would be your dream? You know,
definitely be interested. I mean, some of the Patek Philippe I quite like. Mm-hmm. You know, the very dressy ones. There's...
yeah.
I've looked at them before and I've seen, and but some of the Patek Philippe I really like. Is it something in Son, isn't they? What's the other one?
A Lange and Son or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, Lange and Son or something. Saxone or something?
I do like their, is it their case backs or is it, I forget, there's a case back that I really like. Mm. Maybe it's Glashütte, I forget, but it's got that beautiful gold, like actually gold rotor on it. Oh, it's gorgeous.
I think the other thing is I do, you know, for men's jewelry, mm-hmm. I think precious metals like gold,
yeah,
because it's jewelry, isn't it? Like women wear just you know, you could wear just a gold band. Well, mm-hmm. for men, they wear a watch, so why not have that gold? I do like the idea of precious metal. I'm never sure about white gold, because white gold just looks like stainless steel.
Exactly.
I don't know, but then you know it's white gold, I suppose, and it does glow nicely, apparently. I don't know.
Well, it's funny how, like, my teacher and I were comparing Rolexes, because he has, like, almost the same year Rolex as I do, and we were just trading it off and wearing each other's Rolex, and he was like, yeah, it's white gold and stuff like that, and I could have sworn I thought it was stainless steel. I was literally looking at it, I was like, oh, just stainless steel, but no, it's white gold, and I was like, oh, wow, and it's two-tone, so it's stainless steel, and then the middle is white gold, but it just looks like a mesh. It doesn't look any different. Mm-hmm. You know, it just looked like one big stainless steel band.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, they do all sorts, don't they? They use the rotors and things, it's gold and, you know.
The bezel,
It's funny, in fact, there was this beautiful, the Oris Acrius, there was one really odd one. So if you go on the website, you see there's about 20-odd variations and there's one totally different to all the others. Like, what's going on? And this one that's different has got diamonds and then it's got another precious stone. So it's a lady's one. It's 36.5 mil. It's got diamonds all the way around. There's diamond markers and the marker at the top, which is your triangle or whatever.
I can't remember.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can share.
And I tell you what, I thought, do you know what? 36.5 mil, that'd be great for Caroline. If I had the money... Yeah, look at that thing.
Oh, my bad.
Isn't that amazing?
That's nice.
For a lady, to me, that is perfect for a lady.
Well, I even think for a man. Great watch. I used to have someone come into my store all the time with a diamond-bezeled Breitling. Mm. It was just like, it was flashy and gaudy, but it was a diamond-bezeled Breitling. And I was like, kind of takes away from the whole, like, you know, tough ruggedness of a Breitling. But it's jewelry. You're right. It's jewelry. Mm. Just the same way I wear this chain or this ring.
It's jewelry.
It's just men's jewelry, you know?
Yeah. You know. And potentially diamonds if they look right. But I think certainly for ladies, I think the idea of some diamonds, gold, you know. I haven't got the channel, but did you see the Friends reunion?
No, I didn't. You're talking about the show, The Friends? Yeah.
Yeah, they had the reunion. I was actually, I think it was this morning in bed, I was reading Adinkey. Do you know Adinkey, like the website? They watch stuff and everything.
Is that how you say it? I never knew how to say it, but
I don't know how to say it. But anyway,
I don't know how to say it either. But
they do a lot of like watch spotting and things. You know, they'll pick on a film and they'll look at all the watches and things. Mm-hmm. And the Friends reunion, they were they did a, you know, what watches were worn. And I know that Jennifer Aniston. Has been a big. She's into watches.
She's huge actually into watches.
She's been on the Chris Ward magazine, and she's a big Rolex fan. But she was wearing the Days at the President, like the gold, solid gold President.
I love that.
They got some screen grabs of that, And the other one who was in, I didn't watch the thing myself, but the other one who was in that reunion was Tom Selleck.
Really?
Magnum PI. And he usually wears a Rolex. I think it's probably something like a Batman or something, GMT, you know, with a different color bezel. Mm-hmm. But apparently he's actually got a Daytona on.
Oh, wow.
Strap.
Yeah. So, I like my president. If I could, like, I would buy a presidential in a heartbeat. I love that.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah, really nice.
That, like, gaudiness of it, the mafia look, you know what I'm saying? It's pretty cool. Yeah. When I was a young kid, me and my dad used to go on cruises, and we'd go to the islands, and you can get, like, the fake Rolexes. And I'd always buy myself a fake presidential and just walk around and have the open case back and everything. That's what kind of got me into the whole open case back idea.
Yeah.
And that's why I was so disappointed when I got my Rolex and I was like, wait, there's no open case back? Thank you guys for tuning in. This is Watch Talk Across the Pond, Luxury Watches, Episode 7. Thank you very much, Dean. I appreciate
it. Thank you.